This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is a special edition iFanboy podcast on Justice League versus Teen Titans. Special edition iFanboy podcast on Justice League versus Teen Titans. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Hey, Connor, how you doing?
We'll get into that in a second. And Ryan Haupt.
Hi.
It was a hypothetical question.
We are the iFanboy Animation Brain Trust, and we've reconvened to discuss the latest DC Universe animated original film, as we have been doing for years. Some of us feeling better than others.
I had a cold last week, so I'm glad we're not recording this then.
I've had many colds in the past, so I know what it's like. I feel for you.
This my voice reflects how I feel about this film. So
Can we all be doing that voice then?
We're discussing this film. There's going to be some spoilers. If you haven't seen the film yet, please pause the show and come back. It's better for everybody. And let's just get into it.
When we talk, since this is an animation podcast, can you do me a favor, Connor? Can you say thanks for noticing me?
Thanks for noticing me.
It's good.
So this is the latest in the in-continuity stories, the ones that use the same New 52 characterizations, the same actors, the same... Well, and before we get into it, it's kind of weird. I was thinking about this after the movie that... I mean, obviously, everyone knows who pays attention that movies are obsessed with turning the television, right? Everything is serialized. Everything is in a shared universe.
Right.
So you can see why they decided to do this, but it's not really serialized. Some of them are from like one to another, but there's not like an ongoing story happening here.
There are certain elements that feel very serialized. There are certain callbacks. It's the return. This is the fourth or fifth movie with Dick Grayson's gold chain.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll get to that too.
And other things like Rachel Gould turns up, and that's like a direct. You know, there's a direct line between that and previous films. I totally forgot he was killed by Deathstroke, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
One of those terrible. This is also like the fourth or fifth one starring Damian, which
yeah,
we're going to really.
Yeah, they really think that he's the hook. And I don't know why they think that.
All right, well.
So Damian is the through line.
So, right? Yeah, he kind of is. So we discussed last time with. Oh, crap. What was the last one? This is how my brain is working.
Bad Blood.
Right, Batman Bad Blood, which was another Damian movie.
Mm-hmm.
We had high hopes for this because it was written by Brian Q. Miller, who is one of our favorite comic book writers.
Yeah, you said on the Pick of the Week podcast that this was one to look forward to.
Right, and this is, as we discussed, you know, way back in the old days, he's one of the few writers, well, maybe one of only two that's ever really gotten
two.
Damian,
they're exactly
Damian
two
correctly. Yes.
Grant Morrison and Brian Q. Miller. This is also co-written by Alan Burnett.
Right.
Who's had his hands in several of them. Directed by Sam Liu.
It's their team. At this point, basically, they've got their yeah. their production team that does all these movies the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my biggest problem with this was that I went in with high expectations because of Brian Q. Miller. I really thought this was a mess of a movie.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place. Yes. And like you were saying with the sort of the movie to TV stuff, like this feels like it could have worked as a mini series or like an arc, like one of their short arcs.
Yeah, you know, they did this show called Young Justice, and it was actually really good, and it actually did a good job of serializing things, and at no point does Dick Grayson wear a gold chain. And my wife and I have been watching it because she'd never seen it, and it's very good. Yes. And she's enjoying it a lot, and I'm enjoying it a lot. And why don't they just make
really
that
good
show?
And very ambitious too.
Some of the stuff
that they tackled.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of the like the Flash TV show. There's a lot of Silver Age goodies in there for fans who know what they're looking for, which I enjoy.
And I found myself actually thinking of Young Justice while watching this because it's really too bad that this is the take on the Titans.
Yeah, this did not do Justice League to the Titans.
Or the Justice League.
I still like the costume designs for the Justice League. That was good, but that was the same as before. But yeah, Young Justice, like the team felt small, and it felt like really incohesive. There just wasn't a lot of chemistry between the Titans. Like it was kind of just Starfire trying to hold this team together of characters who didn't really seem like they should be on a team together.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's hurt by some of the connective tissue that they're trying to maintain between these movies, but then there's so many switch-ups between each movie. Like, I mentioned some of them, like Ra's al Ghul is dead, and that plays that's a direct callback to a previous one. But then also, like, Dick and Starfire's relationship is totally different.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Than it was portrayed in Bad Boys. Like, they were, like, Starfire's characterization was like they were actively, you know, into each other, and it almost seemed like Dick was hiding the fact that he was Nightwing or Batman at that point, basically, because that was what was going on in Bad Blood. But here, there's I kind of like the moments of just total weird. Just when this movie goes off the rails, I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
When it takes itself too seriously, I wasn't so much into it. But there are just I found the carnival sequence kind of endearing. Just how
okay, so that was,
it was.
I wanted to talk about that because that just came out of left field.
It does.
Literally, like, in the script of the movie itself, Starfire just bolts upright and says, like, oh, we'll go to the carnival. And then the next half hour of my life was a bad pop punk song and
bonding experience.
What was interesting about that was that it was so unlike the filmmaking choices that they make in these films. It was very cinematic. And, you know, it was a scene out of a teen movie as opposed to – it didn't – I liked it for that reason.
I want to know what band that was.
The song was terrible.
The song is terrible, but like it was kind of interesting because that was like this weird sort of pop punk emo kind of thing that was big around like 2002.
It felt like I was in high school again, but I was ashamed.
Right, exactly. You're like, yeah, I could almost imagine that music coming up on a bad, you know, soundtrack back then.
Yeah, it was like if you took Good Charlotte or Newfound Glory and made them even poppier.
Right. That's basically what they were going for. And
they pulled it off.
A Dance Dance Revolution sort of bond thing between
is that still popular?
Beast Boy and
the teens still dance DDR?
I think other things have usurped that. Like there are other rhythm games that the kids are into, but like, I don't know. It felt like a very of its time that isn't this time. It's like it felt like very 12-year-old kind of decisions.
So what? Let's try to figure out what the plot of this movie was because it was very overstuffed. I feel like nothing got to breathe in it because it was
Tim.
So,
oh, wait,
there was
Damian.
So first of all, between the Justice League and the Teen Titans, I mean they're in the title of the film. You've got a lot of characters, and really Justice League is not in it very much.
No,
that felt very forced.
We've talked about before the reason why they have to keep putting Justice League and Batman in the title of these movies, even though they're not really the star of them. But I mean, they were just hardly in it. I liked the opening.
Here was the plot
sequence with them. That was a good sequence.
Damian is a precocious youth as he has been in every previous film.
Yeah,
but
he's not a
team
player. He's not that, like, Batman is trying to introduce him into the Justice League, and
which seems ambitious.
Which mm-hmm. seems ambitious, and
hey, they got Captain Marvel. He's a 10-year-old kid,
right? And there's some of the weird scripting stuff. There's even a line explaining why Green Lantern and Shazam aren't there. They're like, it's too bad they were too busy to show up, and like, just why don't you just gloss over it? Just like, why even bring it up? It just brings attention to the fact.
Again, Young Justice did a great, like, had built up that dichotomy of having Shazam on the Justice League and not a member of the Teen Titans.
Yes, it did. That was a very good episode.
And why that is maybe also why that works or doesn't work, and
right.
this just ignored it. So okay, so then Bruce makes Dick take Damian to Titan Tower, and there he meets Jaime Reyes, Blue Beetle, and Raven, and Starfire, and Beast Boy, and they don't get along also good. So then they go to a carnival, and they get along slightly better, and then Raven's dad, the Demon Trigon, starts taking over members of the Justice League, forcing them to fight for all of a few minutes before then teaming up to take down Trigon.
Yeah,
meanwhile, Damian learns to love.
Early on, there's also a sort of weird subplot about Superman and Wonder Woman dating.
Yeah.
Just to keep it in
glasses.
Continuity, basically. Yeah.
I had forgotten about that. So I thought that was
that
I thought that was Lois.
Lois.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't help that there's been like three or four different actresses that have played Wonder Woman since that design of the character and
fortunately,
continuity.
It's only been two.
I think this is the third.
This was Rosario Dawson again.
Yeah, this movie was a mini Daredevil reunion.
Yes, it was, because
It was Michelle Monaghan in the first one, then it's been Rosario Dawson.
I thought there was another one after Michelle Monaghan and then Rosario Dawson. Okay, all right, so the second, anyways. So the John Bernthal is Trigon.
Didn't sound like him at all.
There also is a line where they say the Rising is coming, which is also in Daredevil Season 2. It was very interesting parallels to Daredevil Season 2 with those two stars down the line. Let's see, the resurgence or the formation of the Legion of Doom. They call them the Legion of Doom, or was it the Injustice League?
I think
it was
the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, it was the Legion of Doom.
A newscaster says it very seriously.
That's right, yeah.
That's not a laughable title for a villainous organization.
And then the Teen Titans, apparently, like, they set it up as if the Teen Titans have been sort of around for a little bit because they have the T-shaped building.
Right.
But basically, it's for younger heroes to figure their shit out. So it's kind of like a Professor Xavier school.
Starfire.
That Starfire is the eldest.
The eldest sex object of the group.
Right. And
you get the sense that, you know, there was an older teen that had Nightwing on it that had
But
Starfire.
What's unfortunate is that because they have wanted to diversify the Justice League, which is not unfortunate, but they've had to make Cyborg a founding member. Now he was never a member of the Teen Titans, and that's sad because I liked Cyborg as an elder statesman of the Titans.
So they sort of have like a they even use the line Teen Titans Go,
which is
so like they have like, sort of like a mini reunion of the Teen Titans Go team where Cyborg is the first one that they knock the Trigon out of him, and he, you know, goes along with the Titans to help out. So it's just weird.
That was
like
a good show too. It didn't have the continuity of Young Justice, but that theme song was great.
And there are a lot of fans of that too. So
I understand why you know, instead of saying, okay, what makes the most sense story-wise, it's we have to mimic what's happening in another show or medium. So here, the Teen Titans is the version of the Teen Titans Go. It's the same lineup adding with the added addition of Blue Beetle. I mean, I guess it makes sense for a team that is seasoned, but if you're introducing the team for the first time, you know, you're losing a lot of great stories, including, you know, the coda for this movie was that you saw Terra from the Judas contract story coming to the tower, which if they want to do that story with this team, it will make no sense whatsoever. That story works because of the characters that were involved.
It sort of begs the question, like, what was that previous Teen Titans team that Dick and Starfire would have been on? Like, if Terra wasn't involved in it, so I guess, I don't know. Maybe
Cyborg wasn't
Wally.
There.
Right.
Yeah, Wally was, I think, sorely needed. I think if they'd introduced a Kid Flash, that would have actually gone a long way towards providing a sense of cohesion with the team. Yeah. But for some reason, they're just not using Wally anymore ever again, even though lots of us like him.
He's on the Flash TV.
They're also, with the Carnival stuff, they're playing around with they were playing out the idea of Damian as being likable and some kind of budding relationship with Raven, which is kind of an interesting pairing.
I liked Raven a lot, actually, in the movie.
I like Raven in this.
It should have been a Raven movie, because it's about Trigon, her dad.
Yeah, like, I think the Raven stuff was kind of interesting, but pairing her with this, at least this iteration of Damian, is just sort of taken out, like, no one likes Damian, like, and especially this Damian. So I really didn't buy that, and I think they didn't earn it. Like, I think you need to spend much more time with the Teen Titans. And there's even a portion of this where Raven's like, okay, and we're gonna split up now, and like, this is, and it felt like, oh, this is the end of the movie, and then there was a whole other act left over. So it felt like that would have been the end of part one, you know, and then, you know, more episodes featuring the Teen Titans and like getting us to this point where you can have the gravity of Trigon breaking them up. And so it was very difficult trying to suss out how you were supposed to feel about these characters.
Yes.
And the dynamic between them and how they felt about themselves. And I feel like it didn't just like jump from we don't like each other, I almost burnt Damien's face off.
Yeah, that was
to we really like each other, we're best buds. I feel like it zigzagged around. Like they liked each other, then they didn't like each other, then they liked, and it just was not cohesive.
Yeah, where was the oversight? Consistent. That? Like no consequence to Damien getting his face burned off.
That was, yeah, it was,
healed him up.
So let's talk. If anything,
except a great line. I'm sorry, one great line where it was like, this is going to be an awkward phone call to Batman.
Oh, I mean, that segues into what I want to talk about, which,
okay,
there were some things I enjoyed,
right?
And I thought Brian Q. Miller wrote there were a lot of funny lines or bits. You know, he does write Robin really well. I thought Robin's sequence in the opening when he's on crowd control and the way he controls the crowd, I thought was very funny.
It was good.
There was some funny stuff going. I liked the joke about when they talk about Superman pulling the moon out of the sky and it stops Batman in mid-conversation. He hasn't talked about doing that, has he? like, I like that. Those were like funny bits. But I also liked a lot, and I saw people mention this as a Sailor Moon-esque device, but to me it just reminded me of all the cartoons from the 80s I watched, was the costume change at the carnival for each of the characters when they sort of got their own little montage of
It was, but the only one that bugged me was, like, the camera pans around Starfire's butt, like, twice, and right. It just was a little creepy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one that particularly reminded me of Sailor Moon, and that's going back to the 80s or 90s as well for Sailor Moon. So, but like, I do see like the other characters, like the introduction of Beast Boy and like all the Teen Titans Go stuff. It's definitely not all mimicking Sailor Moon. It's definitely not mimicking the Teen Titans Go stylistic intro, which is itself kind of anime based, but not that anime. It does feel like, yeah, like the old school introduction of heroes.
Like, I always like that. Like, felt like Voltron,
Thundercats, you know? Or Super Friends, or yeah, exactly. So that was a lot of fun. I also really like the design of the demons and like all the creepy hell stuff. Like when they would like. Sort of like fall over and then like their bats would like
siblings. Swell up
and sort of explode out and all the snake creatures and stuff. I think there was some definite imagination and thought to, okay, what is this iteration of Hell or Azeroth or all this stuff going to look like? And it's not always just easy choices like, you know, pitchforks and, you know, and horns and stuff. It's there's some other, you know, inspiration going on there. One thing I wanted to mention that I don't know that we've ever sort of talked about in these, I really like the score to this. Hmm. And I'm not talking about the found music, like the soundtrack stuff. I'm talking about the score itself. Frederick Wideman, usually they're very just typical, like, amped up superhero action scores. This one, I felt like there was an element of fantasy to it, and even some, like, some really gloomy and melancholic music for all the Raven stuff. And I thought that was kind of it. Like, it made me feel like Lord of the Rings in certain instances.
That goes along with what I felt like it was a bit more, I hate to say adult because it's a cartoon, but it felt a bit more sophisticated in terms of the way it was put together. The score was a little bit better. The musical montage, as weird as it was, felt more sophisticated. Like, it felt like this more like a teen film than a teen animated film. It was interesting.
Yeah, it's
that is interesting. So I'd be curious. I know that there are listeners of iFanboy who are young enough to upset Connor. I would be curious. I would love some feedback in, like, emails or the comment section on the website if younger people watched this and had a different reaction than we did.
Well, let's get to that. That's like a wrap-up question. We still have some more stuff to talk about.
Okay. I'm just curious.
I know. You're a scientist. I mean, it's natural.
What data?
I actually looked up the credits for the crew because I thought that we discussed before how bad a lot of the voice acting has been, which is strange because one of the hallmarks of these DC animated projects has always been the great voice work. And I thought this particular movie had some really standout, terrible performances. And it wasn't Andrea Romano doing the voice directing. It was someone named Wes Gleason. And I don't know, I haven't looked at the other films because this stood out to me, so I looked it up. But I wonder if she has stopped doing these because I thought the guy doing The Flash made some really weird choices that he hadn't made in the past. He had like a weird accent going. I thought it was a new actor. I thought the guy doing Ra's al Ghul was terrible.
Yeah, Ra's al Ghul was pretty bad.
I mean, we know the problems that we've had with Batman, but like, I just thought on the whole it was a very iffy voice work. And for a company who has made animations for 25 years that have been exemplary in terms of voice casting and voice work, I was pretty surprised.
I'm going to look up Andrea Romano right now, see what would the last one she worked on, because she has been doing them up until very recently.
Yeah,
I remember seeing her in extras and stuff.
Well, I'd go see her speak. I used to go watch the premieres in New York, and she would be one of the people that would be there. Also, while you're looking it up, well, we need to talk about Dick Grayson. I'm a little worried about him. Do you think he's got like a gambling problem? Because he only seems to own one outfit, and he's got that Bruce Wayne money.
Yeah.
So is he spending his money on the ponies? Because he only has the one shirt, the one pair of pants, and the one gold chain. And
maybe he's spending all of his money on high speed internet access so he can get that high res shot of Starfire when they're Skyping.
Well, yeah, wouldn't you? But maybe that's why he's not getting anywhere with her, because of that gold chain.
Yeah, you'd think. I mean, he's got access to bat planes. He could fly to her. They don't have to keep the relationship.
I could be there in 15 minutes. I've got the bat wing. I will fly it to your window. What do you find, Paul? Anything?
Okay, so she did Batman Assault on Arkham, Son of Batman, Batman Assault. That's the same thing. Why is it listed twice? Batman versus Robin and Justice League Gods and Monsters.
Huh. So she didn't do Bad Blood.
So she didn't do Bad Blood. At least that's not listed.
Interesting.
And were there any else that were missing?
Well, this Wes Gleason guy, he did Justice League vs. Teen Titans, and he did Batman Bad Blood. Interesting.
She's also, 2015 to present, is ongoing on The Adventures of Puss in Boots. So maybe the TV show is keeping her busy. But, that wouldn't take every month out of the year, you know, like, I don't know, but maybe there was just some conflict stuff, but
it was interesting. It was just so glaring that I was surprised. And then I looked it up and realized it wasn't her. So this was rough. I felt like it didn't know what it wanted to be. You know, it was a Teen Titans movie, but it had the Justice League shoehorned in very awkwardly.
When I realized, like, oh, right, they have to do the Justice League versus Teen Titans, they're going to have them fight, and they set up this thing where the Justice League wants to take Raven in to figure out this Trigon situation, and the Teen Titans are like, no, she's our friend. And they're like, are they going to get into a fight because of that? And then they have the crutch of, oh, Trigon's going to take over the Justice League members. Right. But that only itself only lasts like a couple seconds.
Yeah, it was so weird.
They did not spend much time versus each other.
Well, because it wouldn't last very long, the fight.
It felt like, okay, we're going to do a Teen Titans movie, but we need to have that Justice League moniker over it. And we've got this versus thing going on in 2016. So
right.
Like, it feels like let's make a reason, like let's conjure up some circumstance where they're going to fight each other, and it feels very forced, very false. And
but then they found out that Gar's and Raven's moms were both named Martha, but Jaime's is named Martha.
We're at the point now where that joke isn't funny anymore, but soon it will be funny again.
Okay. Well, fortunately, this podcast will be up forever. Right.
So, anything more in this one?
A year from now, you're welcome.
Before we move on to the next film, but anything else? So Ryan wants to know from younger listeners, maybe in your 20s, how you felt about this movie.
So, like me.
Yeah, like you.
I think they get some of the clothes right. Like, I could see teens dressing like that to go to the carnival, like with the sneakers and the sort of the skinny jeans and the hats.
I would just need to isolate Paul saying, "I can see teens dressing like that." Gotcha.
Yep. I'm just saying, like comics is very bad at like doing like teen fashion and like hair and stuff. And
yes, correct.
And like more and more, like lately, there are people who are getting better at that, like in the Jamie McKelvey school of not making everyone look like they're from the 70s or 80s. And
Astro City, we're looking at you.
Yeah, and so I think they get that at least right in the Teen Titans aspect of it. I like you said, these character designs are pretty good.
I didn't dislike this movie. It was just kind of meh. And I know meh is a word that drives some people insane, but that's how I felt.
It's not a word. Yeah, it's not a word.
Meh is used in this movie in the Dance Dance Revolution rating system for your moves. Like, if you miss a rhythm step, like meh shows up on the screen, and that annoyed me quite a bit. But anyways, yeah, this was... I think at this point, I don't go in with high expectations at all, even with, you know, Brian Q. Miller on there.
Yes.
I think without Brian Q. Miller, this would have been a lot worse.
Yes. It would have had none of the wit that it had.
I get the sense that he wasn't the problem here. I mean, he has TV chops, you know, it's not just a comics writer coming in and not understanding the form. It's just, I think there were other cooks in the kitchen and that got in the way. And when his stuff came to the surface, it was like, okay, I'm kind of into that. But otherwise, I think this was, I agree with you, it was kind of a mess.
One day, there's going to be a really great book written about why DC is so in on Damian. Why they've gone. Somebody's being blackmailed.
Are you like a Damian truther now? Is this what's happening?
I did it. There has to be a reason.
Damian truther.
We're going to see a YouTube video from you called like Loose Wayne, and it's all about theories.
There has to be a reason. There has to be. And they can't just be holding on to the magic that he brought in the beginning, because that ended relatively quickly.
You know, Grant Morrison is a noted warlock.
Maybe he put a spell on Dan DeDio.
He cast a spell that, like, so long as I'm alive, Damian will be a popular and used character.
So let's talk about the next one, which I'm going to go back to the very beginning and say I'm hopeful for. I just can't help myself. It's The Killing Joke, and I assume, because you guys watch this
digitally. Oh, boy.
You guys watch this digitally, so neither one of you watched the featurette on this, I assume.
No, but I saw the YouTube trailer on the YouTubes.
I think that was the pirated version, so thanks for that. Thanks for helping destroy the industry.
Sorry, I saw a thing.
Here's why I'm hopeful, and you guys can feel free to chastise me. Number one, Bruce Timm is back as executive producer for this.
Right.
The last time he was back was for Gods and Monsters. We all know how that went. It was pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
Number two is this the original voice cast. And now I'm not one of those people that thinks that it always has to be these guys, but these are the guys that set the bar. Yeah. So Kevin Conroy is Batman. Mark Hamill is the Joker. Tara Strong is Batgirl. Those are all the original voices. Ray Wise from Twin Peaks as Jim Gordon, who was very good in the little
bits. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to go. I think I was trying to figure out what it was about these movies that don't go right, and I really do think, you know, when Tim left, they just sort of fell off a cliff, and when he did come back, it was like the old movies again, so I think that this has a real good chance of being very good. Now, I know that, Paul, you probably don't like The Killing Joke.
I'm not wild about it. I think Alan Moore even doesn't like aspects of it.
Yeah.
So many years removed. I don't like seeing that stuff happen to Jim and to Barb. Right. So not my favorite story.
Are we going to see a bunch of think pieces when it comes out, explaining why it is or isn't a good story, even regardless of how the movie does or
yeah,
is?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, certainly.
I'm just hoping we see Commissioner Gordon Balls. I really have my fingers crossed. They talked about they had to expand it because the story itself is actually very short.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So it's a slim volume.
They've had to expand it out. So they said that a lot of it is just Batgirl in the beginning so that you get to know her and are attached to her.
Because they teased her at the end of Bad Blood.
No. This is not a continuity story. So it's Barbara Gordon Batgirl in the old Batgirl costume. And you know, there's going to be a lot of her, you know, fighting crime before she runs into the Joker so that you get a sense, you know. Because it all happens very quickly once that happens. The story goes over.
I wonder if that is their means of doing a little bit of a Batgirl Year One adaptation without doing a Batgirl Year One adaptation. So, I mean, maybe that aspect of it. I mean, I'm going to check it out. I'm still not excited about it.
Right. Does Bruce Timm coming back do anything for you?
Sure.
Okay.
I guess I would say that I wish that he and, you know, and the voice team were using their talents elsewhere. Like I loved Gods and Monsters because it was it was so different. It was a completely new original thing and it was surprising and really refreshing while still feeling like almost a return to form.
Right.
So, I'd like more of that. Like more of that or something completely different.
Watching the feature, it was interesting because there was a lot of behind the scenes footage of them recording, and the way that Mark Hamill fully embodies that voice, the physicality he puts into performing the voice is really interesting to watch.
And, yeah, that I'm interested in. I'm interested to see like him being the Joker.
And Bruce, I think it was Bruce Timm. It might have been Mike Carlin, but I think it was Bruce Timm talking about how kind of creepy it is when he's doing the Joker voice. Like they don't. I think the line was, "I don't know where it comes from, but it comes somewhere deep inside Mark, and it's kind of terrifying."
Mm.
He just fully inhabits that voice. It's pretty amazing. But I'm looking forward to The Killing Joke. Comes out in the summertime. Now, real quick before we go, last time we talked about, I think it was last time maybe, you know, what will the future be? Because before, for Bad Blood, they hadn't revealed the DC Rebirth news. And as we know, following these movies from the beginning, they followed this arc of the comics so that we had the pre-52 stories.
Flashpoint.
Then we had a Flashpoint movie, and then we changed into the new world of the new 52. So now I'm wondering if we're going to get a DC Rebirth movie. And then after that, follow that continuity into whatever we're doing here. Because I can't imagine they'll continue on with this new 52 characterizations.
Yeah, I mean, even watching this, it felt like an artifact with Superman and Wonder Woman.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with that post, you know.
Well, even his costume with this dumbass collar that goes up. It just felt like that's not even in the comics now. So I'm curious.
And like the sleeve thing, like how it goes onto his hands, like that stuff. Is that still in it? I looked at the design.
He's got a little bit of that in the new design.
Got a little bit of it.
Yeah. Got like a pointed sleeve. But I'm curious now if, you know, they'll be announcing, you know, next year DC Rebirth will probably be called Justice League Rebirth or something. But, you know, if that'll be the next movie. Because I'm more than happy to get beyond these characters, these settings, these actors, and try something new. But we'll see. I got my fingers crossed.
I mean, no matter what, the Damian actor kid is going to, like, voice out of it. And, you know, they're not going to be able to do it anymore. So, hopefully, like, either they'll, like, rebrand it as a Rebirth thing or some great stories will come out of Rebirth and they'll just grab those. You know, maybe something out of the Superman story that, the new Superman story that Gene Luen Yang is going to be telling. Right. Maybe that'll be, it'll take off in a real big way and they'll do something on that.
You'd think with the popularity of Flash show, they do a Flash one, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Ryan, you had something you want to talk to people about?
Yes, good people of the iFan base. I am asking for your help because I am a scientist, as is often joked about on these shows, and science costs money, so I am doing a crowdfunding campaign to try to raise a little bit of money for my science. This project is looking at the ecology of sloths, living sloths, to try to connect those animals to their fossil relatives, the giant ground sloths, so using some chemical proxies and I'm trying to raise money for it. So the campaign is being run through experiment.com. You can see my project at experiment.com/sloths. And I'm part of a challenge program where if I finish the campaign with the most number of backers, so even if people just go and give $1, I get an extra $1,000 from the website at the end of the campaign. So it's going really well so far. I've got some stretch goals in mind if we reach our main goal. And if any fan people want to help out.
Sloth World.
Sloth Park.
Go into the amber.
Dude, the sloth sanctuary where I'm doing this work it, in Costa Rica, it has, like, the giant gate at the front of it, and it does still... Yeah, the first time I drove up to it, I didn't know what to expect, and, you know, they've got, like, a guard, because, you know, people would try to break in and do weird stuff with sloths, so, you know, they have some security. Yeah, the first time I pulled up to it and was waiting for the guard to open the gate, I was just humming the...
So why sloths?
We don't really know that much about sloths, so they're really enigmatic. They're super weird. They have really low body temperatures for mammals, so mammals obviously maintain an internal temperature, and these guys are closer to ambient temperature of the air around them. They poop once a week. They're so slow that algae grows on them, and they're super picky eaters, and so we just don't... And they're hard to observe. Like, you look up in the trees, and they're not doing anything, so I'm trying to... use other kinds of techniques to understand what these animals are doing with their lives without having to observe them all the time directly. And that is going to be a really helpful data set for people who want to know more about sloth ecology and conservation. But then I also want to see if those proxies will work for their fossil relatives, because you can't observe a fossil. And this kind of connection between these two groups hasn't really been done yet. So typically ground sloths are just compared to other mega herbivores like mammoths and mastodons, but their closest living relatives are right here, just waiting to be studied in this way, and it just hasn't been done yet.
Are you attempting to capitalize on the recent success of Zootopia at all?
No, I've been studying sloths probably before Zootopia was even in production. So
I didn't say you're jumping on. I'm saying, are you going to use this to catapult your study into the stratosphere?
I hadn't intended on it. I actually haven't seen Zootopia yet, but that the trailer has the sloth DMV, which is pretty great. Sloths are slow. This is true. This is a true thing about sloths. But that slowness is really just efficiency. If you think about it, they're just moving the bare minimum amount to get the thing done. And that's laudable, not laughable.
All right.
You know, the only animal we've named after a deadly sin. Come on. Cut them a break.
Now, when are you going to study spores, molds, and fungus?
I don't have any intention of studying spores, molds, and fungus. Though I do have some fossil... ground sloth poop in the lab right now. It's anywhere from 12 to 30,000 years old, and I was looking at it under the microscope, and there might be some fungal spores in that.
Okay. What about the paranormal?
No, well, so among the folks at the sloth sanctuary, it is a prevalent theory that sloths were sent here from another galaxy specifically to confuse biologists, and so there's maybe a paranormal element there that I can either prove or disprove by doing the work I'm doing.
All right. Well, there you go.
I've got a segue.
Okay.
There's a sloth link to my new comic book, which will be coming out.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Maybe later this year or maybe next year. It's called The Margins. It's coming out from No Relation Fanbase Press. They're rebranding themselves as Fanbase Press in May, and we're one of the books that they're doing. And this is something that I co-wrote with David Acampo, friend of iFanboy, and the artist is Amanda Donahue. She has a background in animation, and this is her first comics work. And I'm not blowing smoke. It's really, really good. I've seen, you know, some pages rolling in, which have been very exciting. And even her thumbnails look super polished, and the storytelling is so good. So really excited about that. And hopefully I'll be able to talk a little bit about it more in the coming months. But we're not even at the, you know, like, pre-order this stage. So I'll update on that. But there is a sloth connection to that. There are some goblin creatures in there. And as some of the reference, I suggested sloth arms and, like, sloth hands. So there you go. Nice. There's a segue to The Margins, which is about fantasy, the worlds we create, escapism, and sort of our sense of ownership over the worlds we create. So that's a little tease as to what The Margins is about.
Well, there you go.
So you've got one science-based reality thing to support and one fantasy make-believe thing to support.
Yeah, I'm not shaking the coffers just yet, but later on I'll be hitting you guys up for for pre-orders and things, because I'm making comics now.
This November.
Destroying comics from the inside now instead of from the outside.
Well, there you go. So in the meantime, before that book hits and before Ryan finishes his Sloth project, go to ifanboy.com. You can talk about this film. If you're young, tell us what you thought of it. Did it hit the right notes, or was it hopelessly outdated?
I'm happy to entertain any Sloth-related questions in the comments section.
If you're 70, tell us what you thought about this movie. I'm also interested.
Yes. Were you confused by the dancing?
We don't even know how long sloths live. We just don't know.
Really?
Because they're really hard to keep in captivity.
Don't they move really slowly? How's it hard?
Because three-toed sloths in particular refuse to eat in captivity, typically. They're like great white sharks in that way. And yeah, so they're really hard to keep in captivity. And the one at the sloth sanctuary, their kind of mascot, Buttercup, was rescued by the sanctuary when she was only a very, very young sloth. Her mother was, killed by a car. She was hit by a car, and Buttercup lived, and they've been able to raise Buttercup. And she's a few years younger than I am. She's in her mid-20s.
That's longer than I would think a sloth would live. Yeah, that's interesting.
Right, exactly. For a mammal like the size of Paul's dog, it's a long time, and she's still sexually active. Like, she still goes into estrus once a month. So she's not even reaching old age yet. So it's pretty crazy.
All right.
She's a total diva.
Segue from that, Connor.
I got nothing. I'm just holding on, barely holding on. So head over to ifanboy.com, talk about this show. You can listen to our weekly podcast, the Pick a Week podcast, where we talk about the week's books. And then you can look forward to our next Animation Brain Trust show in the summertime when we talk about The Killing Joke. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Ryan.
I'm just going to call you Sloth Man.
You have to say it slower than that, though.
Sloth Man. Mommy's all right. Daddy's all right. They just seem a little weird. Surrender. Surrender. But don't give yourself away.
Hey. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened, because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.